Welcome to our Caterpillar Soup podcast. My name is Joanne Webb, and I am the producer and host of this series. The term caterpillar soup refers to the process that takes place in the belly of the chrysalis, where the caterpillar transforms into a butterfly. Throughout this podcast programming, I will be speaking individually to a diverse group of people sharing their own transformative experiences that changed the patterns and directions in each of their life journeys. Today, I am thrilled to introduce you to our first guest, dancer, arts administrator, writer, filmmaker, yoga teacher, poet, and nationally recognized dance educator, Susan Cambig Tracy. I am so excited to have you on this first podcast, Susan. You come to us with so many transformative experiences that have shaped your professional and personal life.
You know, I'm just delighted to be here, and especially your first person that you're interviewing. It's a great honor. Thanks, Joanne.
Well, let's get started. Since you have written about the caterpillar's journey to butterflyhood, how do you identify based on one of your own transformative life experiences? And please feel free to share a piece of your writing if you'd like, because that can illustrate it as well.
Well, I've always enjoyed writing poetry. I had a teacher in the 10th grade who just inspired us to write poetry. And I wrote consistently about my experiences as a teenager and college. And then later in life, I just kind of stopped. I don't quite know why. And a friend of mine named Howard Kern, who's a lawyer and a poet, developed a process that he designed that was called shift poetry. And he encouraged me to revisit my life. And he and I would have coffee after I was his yoga teacher. And after yoga, we'd often go and have coffee and discuss our lives. And he would read me many of his poems that he had written. So I started again writing poetry. And then over many, many years, he and his partner, Barbara Ligeti, encouraged me and many others through the shift poetry to write my poems and put them in a book. And they knew my work by that time very, very well. So they helped me select the poems that they thought should be there. And as we started looking and examining them, they kind of fell into different categories. And it became clear that it was very similar to the stages of a butterfly. And I got very excited about kind of investigating these stages myself. And then with the help of Barbara, Paul, my husband, and Howard, we organized all the poems that I had into about five different parts. And maybe it would be helpful if I told you what they were.
Let us hear your process in coming to terms with that a little bit.
Well, the nice thing about this process of shift poetry is that they give you prompts, and then you can write about anything. It doesn't have to be exactly what the prompt was, but maybe a word in the prompt. And so I began to go backwards in time, or even forward in time, and see kind of the process and the meaning and the purpose of my life. And so with their help, I organized them into the egg and the larva, the very first part of the caterpillar's life. And this kind of set the stage in my childhood, my influences of my parents. And then from there, it was like building a cocoon after I had eaten my way into a larger, more aware person. Building the cocoon was really about assessing my life, developing it, developing my gifts, my talents, having more experiences to enlarge my point of view. And so I assessed and made course corrections during this time. Finally, the next stage was really, you know, something I'd like to say that I left out a part. from larva to caterpillar. That's the part I left out. And that's when I began to move my forward in my life and eating my way into higher awareness, so to speak. Building the cocoon came next. That's when I did a lot of assessing and making course corrections. And then finally, during that stage, I developed my career. I enlarged my life. I had a marriage. I had a divorce. But first, I had children and then a divorce. And then I finally got married again, became a stepmother, lost my child at 19 in a car accident, my oldest daughter. I had breast cancer. So I was building and then having some big crises in life and then rebuilding and reclaiming and kind of moving to finally my life in the cocoon was ready to evolve and open up and allow me new wings. In fact, probably wings that had been developing all along. And I took flight. And so that's when you kind of go for it. You go, this is the time that I have. And there is a beginning and middle and an end to life. So I better give it all I've got at this stage. So my poems were about gaining perspective through increased freedom. And then later your children leave, and then you find that you are back to being a single person, perhaps sharing your life with a partner as well, but you're still that single person with a partner, not you've just evolved into a person that's part of another person. And so I think I did my most growth there. And then finally, I wrote the fifth part, which was Free Flight. And that, by the way, was the name of my dance company, Free Flight Improvisational Dance Company, in which we performed and interpreted artwork in lots of different art galleries and centers and schools.
Would you like to read a piece?
I don't have a poem about free flight. It's just that that was the category of all the poems in that particular period of time. But you know, I actually was looking at my poems this morning and I found a poem that I would like to read just a section of because I think it relates. And it's called The Movie Version of My Life. There's the movie version and then there's the real version. And so I'm going to read the part about the real version. Haven't I been on this quest before? Haven't I been searching for truth through eternity? Haven't I asked for guidance? Haven't I given my best efforts to moving my story, our story, the human story forward? Like fairy tales caught in the confines of the original script, I feel stuck, reliving life after life in the same pursuit. Who am I? Where am I actually from? What am I supposed to do now that I am here? Who am I supposed to work with? Why? What is this all about anyway? We are alone, but together. We're together, but we're still alone. And so I think that the part in the cocoon, or the chrysalis, as you mentioned earlier, was really the time where I was single, I was divorced, and I had to re-examine my life. And I had to rebuild it and rebuild it with a little bit more ability to feel that life was worthwhile and I could see the possibilities rather than the limitations.
You know, something that I just am so aware with you is that you have so much resiliency in the way that you handle things. I've always been amazed about that with you, how you're able to go through something, and I know it's difficult things as well as wonderful things, because those can be challenging too. But where do you think you get that resiliency that you showcase?
Well, that's definitely from my childhood. I had wonderful parents. I was very, very fortunate. My parents both came from, they were, my family's been in America since the early 1600s, both sides of my family. And they went through many, many challenges themselves. And so they gained resilience in being a pioneer and being someone to have to start their life all over and meet the challenges of a new country. But I was lucky that my father was a very strong and blustering man. He had strong urges to help the human race. He was a lawyer, then he was an assemblyman for the state of California, then he was a judge, and he was always helping people to look at their problems and try and resolve conflicts in their life and move forward. And he was known as the Great Settler. He settled more cases than almost any other judge by a long shot, because he told people it's better to use this as an opportunity to examine your life and then to move forward, instead of just to have a right and a wrong, and one person loses and the other person wins. So there was always a sense of whatever problem you had, he would never solve it for you, but he would give you the kind of encouragement or even get angry at you and make you have to fight for your life or fight. I remember one time I broke my leg, and I had a cast on. It was before they did very much physical therapy or anything. I was 14. And I, for a long time after I had the cast off for several weeks, I still was limping. And he looked at me and he said, "Susan, do you want to be a cripple for the rest of your life? Because if you do, you're on the path to do that. You start right now putting weight on that leg and you start to walk." And I was so angry that he was not sympathetic to me. And I just got so furious that, of course, I did it. And I regained my full ability to walk on my leg. So that was kind of the way he handled things. My mother, on the other hand, was the graceful woman of wisdom who was able to handle a man with such passion and power that he had, and calm him down and keep our life in a balanced state. So she was really the spiritual guide, and he was the kind of person that got you to face things in your life, deal with them, and wisdom. So that's pretty much how I got my resilience.
That's wonderful. Did you find you had any mentorship in your professional life that helped you to support what you learned from your parents along the way?
Oh, definitely. I had many, many extraordinarily influential mentors. One of my most powerful mentors was Bella Lewinsky. And she was a choreographer of great stature. It had such strong vision, and she was very much into investigating things and exploring life. She was a modern dancer, not a ballet dancer, although she had a ballet background. But she really, I would say, was one of my greatest influences, and always saw in me more potential than I ever saw in myself. And it was because of her that I was given some opportunities that allowed me to be involved in a national program in dance called Artists in Schools Dance Component. And it was by the National Endowment for the Arts, and at that time, the U.S. Office of Education, which is sadly apparently disappearing. She was really very much involved with the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts. And we were given millions of dollars for this program. And she believed that I was someone that should be traveling to different states. And she chose me on many occasions to precede her and follow her dance residency with her company. And so I grew very quickly under her guidance and her belief in me and her modeling of how I should really be able to not only present dance, but deal with people and get them to see the power in dance in our programs that we were putting forth. So she was definitely a big influence in my life.
Fabulous. You know, I'm thinking that one of the interesting aspects of Caterpillar's transformation is that for a very long time, nothing seems to be happening or changing while it is in the chrysalis. Yet so much is taking place. Can you give us a little sense of how that has worked in your own life, that you feel like you're going forward and then it feels like nothing is happening, and then something happens. You know, those shifts that we take and the stopping and the starting of it all.
It's very interesting because I think that time becomes something different in different times of your life. As a child, you just think that your whole life will be with your family and playing and going to school and having new experiences and making friendships, and you just think that will go on forever. And then all of a sudden, it's time to leave. Your parents say, "We've done our part, and now you're either going out into life for a job or some kind of an adventure or to college." And so then you go into college, and you think that period of time is going to last for a period of time. And then all of a sudden, you realize, "Oh my gosh, I've graduated, and now I'm on my own. I'm supposed to support myself. Maybe I shall have a family." And so I think that each stage, then you raise, if you do have children, your own children, and you think they'll be with you kind of forever. You know they're eventually going to grow up. That's the goal. But you think that they're going to live with you. You can't imagine that they're going to leave you ever. And they do. And that's what you wanted. And then another stage of life comes, and that stage is really about how can I live my life again alone or with my partner? But my children are starting their own experiences and lives and careers, and I'm not needed in the same way I once was. So you keep shifting, and then you get there, and some lasts a lot longer and some are too short. But I think that even like being pregnant, you want this child, but it takes 9 months to bring them forth. And then when they come forth, you're not quite ready for what the responsibilities before you are. And I think old age, aging and going into old age from middle age is also another one of those times when you have to readjust everything in your thinking. Maybe your career is no longer at the center of your life. Your family has long gone and started their own. You are back to who am I? Why am I here? What is life about? And what do I want to give to it? And what do I want to receive? So that's kind of how I would relate to that.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know that a lot of people will know this about you. Certainly your friends and your family do, but you and your husband are presently experiencing a major transformative experience after having lost your home and yoga studio to the recent fires in the Palisades. How are you able to observe this process while you are still going through it?
Well, it's very interesting because you and I have spoken at different stages of this experience. And as we move through the initial shock and horror at what had happened, I continue to change in my viewpoint about where I am in the process. And so at the beginning, it is just the first stage of grief, which is denial. This couldn't be our house that we saw on television burning up, because that's where we were on television watching 24 hours a day. Everything start to be swallowed by the fire and then digested and turned into ash. And so it was a horrific experience, like a movie that you couldn't leave. You were stuck there as an audience member watching something that was becoming from the movie to a personal experience with your house, your life, your past, all the things that you had held dear. And so I would say the stages of grief, which for anyone that doesn't know them, they're very quick. I'll give you a quick overview. This denial, the initial shock, the refusal to accept the loss. And then there's an anger and a resentment. Why me? Why did this happen? How could this have happened? And then there's the bargaining. Maybe if I can make a deal, I can reverse things like Superman did in the movie, where I can turn the world around and go back a day and make things come out differently. And then the depression of deep sadness, emptiness, despair, a sense of deep loss, overwhelmed. Pulling away from the world, maybe I don't need to be here anymore. Maybe it's just easier to die. And then finally, you come to terms with it and you accept your loss. And I think for me, I really realized all the people in the world that had had losses since the beginning of time. And they've all had to fight their way through their emotions and for the sake of their families and the community to keep going and to rebuild. So that's where we are right now.
Wow. It's a lot to have to go through in a very short period of time to realize that the way that you were living is not the way you are living today. And change didn't happen gradually. It happened very suddenly. But I really want to give you my real heartfelt sense of well-being for both of you, because I know your husband is a very resilient person too, and you both have managed to work through this in a very creative way.
Well, there's two things that come up as you say those words and those thoughts, which I appreciate very much, by the way. In my case, both my husband and I have already experienced something so much worse than the fires, than losing our home and possessions. He lost his beloved wife, Barbara, and mother to his children to death in a car accident. And then 2 years after we were married, we lost my oldest daughter, Julie, a few days after her 19th birthday in a car accident. So, actually, to be quite honest, nothing else comes even close to those losses in our life. So, while this was a horrific loss, it was, in comparison to the other losses, not nearly as traumatic. And so, I think one of the things I learned in my life is that when you have a loss, if you can get yourself to the place where you can see a loss much greater than what you had, then that seems much smaller in comparison to the things that have happened to people in war. To become, your home is destroyed, but you don't have a country and you are in danger all the time. And so, in comparison to what other people in the world are experiencing, we can recover from this. And also, it's not something you go through alone. Tragedy immediately brings people together, and you realize how much goodness there is in the world, and that people want to help you, want to give to you, want to help you rebuild, want to wrap their arms around you and comfort you. And so that becomes another problem. Can you receive all that's being given to you in this moment where you feel very alone to start with? And so part of what we had to do was to learn to accept other people helping us because we couldn't do it by ourselves.
Yes, I think that's, and sometimes that's one of the hardest things to do, in terms of bringing people together, is allowing other people to bring you in and support you during a very difficult time.
This is true of our human race. When tragedies happen, for some amazing reason, it brings out the very best in people, and they forget their differences, and they forget anything except about the connection to another heart and how they can use their heart to lighten yours.
I so identify with that. I know my father had died very suddenly when I was about 18 years old, and I was playing cards with him, and he got up and he said, "I don't think I can play this game anymore," and literally went to the backyard and died.
Oh my goodness.
And then years and years later, my late husband, I'm saying late husband, so it tells you the answer right there, died very suddenly. And in my mind, it was like, why would this happen to anybody twice, to men that had such great impact on me? But I had to let other people in, and letting other people in helped me to find my way to the next part of my life. And so it shows how that transformative life experiences is about change we make, but also allowing other people in to help us make the changes that we need to make. And that's what I'm hearing very much from you.
Yes, you have certainly, first of all, I want to acknowledge your story of loss and really say that loss actually becomes a time when all of us can either give up and be completely unable to go on with our lives, or it's a challenge to have to refine your life and find what really is the important things about being alive, and that's about connecting, as we both found, with others. And in that process, you become more compassionate, understanding, and realize that life is such a gift and you can't waste it. You can't just sit there mourning for the rest of your life. You've got to find a way of finding meaning again. And I think that's what builds resilience. But I would say, in terms of this, that in this fire in particular, it wasn't just us, it was that our entire community was broken up. It was like we had a bomb hit and we were all flung in different directions. So I felt, because I was a yoga teacher, that it was important for me to keep teaching wherever I could and whoever could come. And I could only do it in a tiny living room in my one bedroom apartment that we've temporarily rented. So I cleared out all the furniture and I set up a Zoom situation, and I invited those up to four people who could come in person. And then the rest of them are online. And I just continued to try and keep something that was a regular meeting time of community and keep it going under whatever circumstances I could. So on some people, I'm on a phone. On some people, I'm in a larger laptop, but I'm in their living room. I'm in their home with them, and I am giving them something that is familiar, their yoga class, that stabilizes and helps us to center and balance ourselves. So yes, it's very challenging, but I'm continuing and my students are continuing with me, and it gives us that sense of strength and purpose and familiarity with a routine in life. I know that I was impressed with some women from Australia that had been abducted from a ship that they were on, moving them by the Japanese. And so they were put in a prison for several years. And the first thing they did was to establish an order and a kind of routine for everyone to give some structure to the life. And so that is kind of what I was inspired to do myself. So that, for sure, just trying to allow myself to understand how much I need other people. I'm a very strong person, but I also realize and have allowed myself to accept gifts, to accept being a part of a community. Now, when we had our yoga studio, it was also a meeting place in which we were able to share so many of our friends, because we're in the arts and my husband has been on Broadway and he has a lot of very well-known friends. We were able to bring people into our studio to inspire us with their stories, just as you're doing on this podcast of Caterpillar Soup. And we were able to hear about their life and their careers and the traumas and the barriers and the tragedies that they faced and how they evolved and became richer because of the experiences rather than less rich or just without any structure to their life or any power. And what happens is, when you go through tragedies and your community is challenged and separated, by coming together, you strengthen everyone in a way that they couldn't do by themselves. And you rebuild with the circumstances that you have. And I think that's the big lesson. So we strive to get back to our salons again, where we have an individual come and share for just a small group of people their story, and that through the story, we can all become inspired to take whatever has happened in our life and realize that you have to build new chapters, whatever stage you're in. In our case, because we were in our mid-80s, our house died before we did. And our community was completely splintered, and everybody is separate now. But because of technology, we were able to bring people back, even in my small living room in my one-bedroom apartment, to feel connected again.
And I want to say that I've been one of the blessed to have been in the audience of your salons. And I always felt the sense of community building and learning and growing and gaining new respect for different aspects of the creative process. So I want to thank you so much for the work you've both done. I know that you shared with me about having different perspective about your life and sitting up on the roof of that house that you've recently lost.
It doesn't exist anymore. But for that moment, I was able to look at my life, and I wrote, now in my early 80s, I have climbed to the roof of my house. I love the view from here. It is exhilarating. Paul and I sit here together on the edge, on the ridge beside the chimney, knowing that at any instant, one of us could fall. But as frightening as that is, it is not unexpected. We start alone, we end alone. How fortunate we are to have found a compatible, loving traveler with whom to share our journeys and our stories. So that is where I'm at right now with our community and with other people we meet. And it really draws us more to realize that we are here to move the whole human family forward. For our survival, for us to survive, is a way that we make our whole family of human beings survive all around the world. We all must be here for each other. We all must do our part while we're physically here and have faith that the best in people can always be found if we look. And sometimes it takes tragedy to make that happen for us to realize the preciousness of each moment and never taking it for granted.
I just want to thank you, Susan. This has been such a very interesting conversation. And I feel like it's been a baptism for this podcast, you know, an opportunity to really let the baby get dip it into the water and bring it up and feel the sense of breath and new opportunities that await it. So thank you, Susan, for being that first guest for our Caterpillar Soup podcast. Today, you've given us so much to consider regarding your own life, work transformative experiences. It's very clear to me that even during this challenging period of your life, that you will have the ability to conquer and succeed at whatever comes your way. You have in the past, and you will continue to.
Joanne, thank you. It's been a stimulating opportunity for me to have a chance to explore my ideas. Until someone asks you, many times you haven't even thought about what the answers to these questions might be. So I've learned a lot about myself and just love the process of working with you.
Thank you, Susan. If you want to check out information on Susan's books, please go to her Instagram and go to our website, caterpillar-soup.com, and sign up for our bi-monthly newsletter and learn about future podcasts. Looking forward to getting together soon.
Don't forget.